Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190 at 11 o'clock, and we're glad you're here. In case you're about to get out of your car, we are streaming live over the internet on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast after its completion on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. And as I'm continually learning all over the place that I don't even know about. So you'll find us on the web. You'll find us anywhere you want to find us. We have a great guest today. Here on Driven to Business, we enjoy talking about a variety of topics having to do with leadership, with career development, with life development, in addition to business. Our guest today is Dr. Jay Silva. Dr. Silva is the Assistant Director of the Access Office at Eastern Michigan University. He's an adjunct professor at Schoolcraft College and the founder of the Santa Maria Children's Foundation. He's also an author. We're going to talk today about a book he's written called Life 100. Dr. Silva, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure, Mr. Mayfield.
Dr. Silva, I want to spend most of the program talking about your very interesting book and about the career and the life precepts that you discuss in there. But, you know, you are a counselor and you have a lot of experience in that. And I thought it might be of interest to our listeners. Because a lot of us, as I'm sure you know, a lot of us are probably a bit reticent to accept counseling at times or to ask for counseling. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, why is that so? Why are we reticent to do that?
Well, as children, we experience criticism, nicknames, stigma, and we don't like to come across as weak. And there's a misconception that people who seek help, who seek wisdom from others, are weak, when actually they should be perceived as wise people. Everybody wants to get as close to God and perfection as possible, but we all need help. So that fear is based on a history of punishment. Anytime people seek help, they're perceived as weak, and that's not so. We're not all superhero. So seeking help should be perceived as being wise, trying to address issues that we may have and try to improve our standing as parents, members of the community, and so forth.
Do you think it's pride on our behalf, perhaps? Is that the problem a lot of us have, is just pride that we know everything?
Yeah, that's part of it. There's a lot of pride. There's also a lot of anxiety. People are afraid of being stigmatized.
Right.
So it's not because people recognize they have problems. They lose sleep. They make mistakes. They lose relationships. So pride as a sin is not alone. I think there's a great deal of anxiety. People live with excessive anxiety, and that's why they don't seek help. It's for fear that something worse may come out of it.
You know, I have used in the past, Dr. Silva, I've used a number of business consultants. Now, this is a little bit different than what we're talking about with you. This is strictly more confined, strictly to the business area. But I've used them, and honestly, it's been of a great deal of help to me in resolving some issues that, as a small business person, I just didn't know where to go. And I would get them in, and we would sit down and go over some things. And I was always surprised. A lot of times, the answers came out of me. But they were asking good questions, but I found out it helped me to organize my own thoughts and really come up with good solutions that I think I would not have come up with had they not been there, even to ask me some penetrating questions that I don't think I would have asked myself. And I'm sure you ran into that in counseling as well.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the best answers usually are within the person, and the one the person is more likely to act on are those where they feel they help create or identify. You know, a counselor does not intentionally give advice or make decision for people. We try to guide people. In my earlier days, we called that guided group interactions, where we guided people. We're looking for options. People have certain ways of behaving and thinking. They have some other ways hidden somewhere. or part of their repertory, but they don't always choose them or pursue them until they have an extra voice, somebody reflecting back to them what they're saying or thinking. And that gives them an opportunity to explore further and to look for another way. There might be a better way of looking at things. So you are correct. Most answers are within us. We just need to be guided to find them.
Dr. Silva, I have told my pastor this. I'm a regular church goer, and he did not take offense at it. So I'm hoping you won't take offense as the implication here of it. But we, you know, I often use the example that many times when you hear a good sermon, you haven't necessarily heard anything you hadn't heard before or didn't know, but a lot of it just serves to remind you of things that you should be doing and you should be thinking about. And I know that at least from my experience with business consultants, that's been very much the case. I sort of knew what to do. I just wasn't. I need reminding of what I need to be doing. And I'm sort of thinking when you're counseling someone about life problems, the exact same thing comes up. It's not necessarily brand new information to them, but you're sort of focusing them on the things they need to be focused on.
Yeah, you are correct again, Mr. Mayfield. I agree with you 100%. A good sermon does not save a soul. Good counseling does not change behavior. In addition to that verbal interaction to the message, there's a need to create accountability. That's why in my book, I developed this chapter 3 and 4. Chapter 3 is about problems, and chapter 4 is how to deal with them, how to deal with solution. So if you give me a good message, a good sermon, I need to have some work to go, homework to go along with
right.
it. But homework means, okay, that's good. What do I do with it? I need to go out and engage in behavior, in some action to put into practice what I have learned. Now, that's ideal, but it doesn't always work. We need another step. We need a partner, a mentor, a sponsor, or somebody to work with us to create accountability to make sure that we are living what we're supposed to live.
Right.
And I like to go one step further with written accountability, keeping a journal or collecting data on daily accomplishments, daily steps towards living that healthy life, living that successful career life, family life, and spiritual lives. So we need accountability. We need things in paper, like a promise of a paycheck does not motivate. The actual paycheck may be a little more motivating than just the promise of it. So words can only go so far. We need to have things in paper. We need to have something more tangible to relate to bring things to fruition.
You know, it's also the times that I have been, quite honestly, and I'll admit this, the times that a few consultants or counselors or friends or, in some cases, pastors, have sort of forced me into what you just described right there, forced me into doing, putting down a few things and a few goals and a few and steps to take and observations that I need to make and perhaps even write them down. Sometimes just the discipline of doing that act changes a lot of things for you. And it is amazing. It's almost, I tell people a lot of times, if you take responsibility for your own actions instead of blaming everybody else for everything that's wrong with you, in a almost an unanticipated kind of way, that's actually empowering because, you know, if I've got a problem and I'm blaming everybody else, well, I can't do anything about everybody else. But if I look at myself, well, I might can do something about that. And it's empowering.
Absolutely. And then there's another element to doing something about what you need to do is to reinforce it. If you have a list of goals from the sermon or from your work situation, family responsibilities, and if you meet those goals, then you have to celebrate them. You celebrate them by sharing them with friends, church, but success stories are socially rewarding. Raising my children, we all had behavioral goals at home, behavior contract, and we gave ourselves stars throughout the week. And whoever had the most stars would choose how we would celebrate on Friday night, a movie or a pizza. But to have a little reinforcement that we work towards helps to motivate too, and generate more tangible reinforcement.
I think that's so wise, and I think a lot of us, and there's been books written about this, I think, that have been parents, and I always tell people, until you've had teenagers, you don't really know anything about raising kids, but after you've been through that, you certainly know more than you did before. Hey, in about a minute here, and I want to talk about the rest of the book and your precepts in there, but you know, you have an interesting and successful background. You were born in Brazil. And in about a minute, can you sort of give us your journey from Brazil to this career you have now?
Yes, in Brazil, as a teenager, I had the opportunity to meet members of the American Peace Corps volunteers. So we made some good friends. That's how I was invited to come to the U.S., finish high school, and 6 months turned into 6 years. I went to college to play soccer. And after college, I had the chance to meet Eunice Kennedy Shriver. I chauffeured her in Albuquerque for a while. Then she sent me to Brazil to do some work with Special Olympics.
Wow.
And one thing led to another. And my wife was born here. My children were born here. So here's where I am. I'm happy with it. So home is where your children are. Home is where your family is. Home is where you find God, too. And here's where I am.
Well, that's an amazing story. I did not know that about you being Eunice Kennedy Shriver's driver. That's actually kind of fascinating.
I was a chauffeur for only a few days during the International Special Olympics in Albuquerque, but she was very instrumental in helping us with orphan children, special children in Albuquerque, and motivated me to later on work with orphan children in Brazil. She's quite an inspirational lady.
Well, after the break, we're going to talk about your book. And, you know, one of the things in your book that you spend a lot of time talking about are the ideas of people that influence us. Like, I think you call them models, perhaps. I would call them mentors, or certainly people that influenced us to do great things. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Driven to Business. This is Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. Very interesting guest today, Dr. Jay Silva. Dr. Silva, among many other accomplishments, is the author of a book called Life 100. By the way, you can find him on the web at life9091.com. And Dr. Silva, you were telling me there's other places this book's available as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, currently at Ave Maria University in Florida. And at Eastern Michigan University Bookstore. I haven't promoted the book because I'm busy doing other things, but eventually I may do more promotion. But there are very few places where the book's available. Of course, people can contact me if they want to read it. They can write or call me directly. I find time.
Okay. By the way, the links to Dr. Silva will be on eddiemayfield.com. Just go there and look at blogs, and you'll see a blog about Dr. Silva and about today's program. Also on the written section of the podcast, it will be on eddiemayfield.com, will be links to Dr. Silva, so check that out. Doctor, let's take a few moments and talk about your book. It's an interesting book, and by the way, for those listening, it's a very easy read book, and I don't mean that in any kind of demeaning fashion. It reads easy because it's very interesting to read, and it's easy. And give us in a few minutes, Dr. Silva, just the premise of the book, Life 100. What's it about?
Well, the intent was to motivate people to live 100% now. I have learned in private practice, but also work in other areas, that we waste a lot of time and energy living in the future or in the past. And my conclusion was, the more energy we spend now taking care of business today, the happier we are, the most productive we become, and the fewer problems we have. On the contrary, if we spend a lot of time in the future, we develop a lot of anxiety and we lose productivity. If we spend time thinking about the past, living in the past, whether it was good or bad, we develop depression. And the future and the past are part and will be a part of most people's lives, or all people, but the best way to live is live 100% now, or live at least 90% of your energy every day. Burn your energy taking care of the main pillars of life, and then the other 10% plan for the future without too much anxiety, and remember past lessons so we don't make the same mistakes again.
You know,
that's the main message. Live now.
You have an interesting way of presenting that, I think, in the book. You have a character that I'm assuming is a real-life character. You should talk about him, called a JW in your book. Tell us about him.
Yeah, his name is actually José Wernicke, JW for short. He was a teacher in my hometown. My parents were very wise, and they realized that I had listened to their voice quite a bit. And most children by a certain age stop listening to the same message from their parents over and over again. So you listen, you need an outside voice, somebody different. So they somewhat hired JW to spend time with me, and JW loved to read. He drank a lot of coffee, and he was also a chain smoker. JW was fascinating. He read every single book he could. He did share coffee, but he never offered anybody a cigarette. And his main message was, a good friend will never offer you a cigarette. That's why I consider him a great mentor. He was not perfect. You know, cigarette eventually harmed his health, but he would not share that part of himself with others. He kept us from smoking. And to this date, I had never smoked a cigarette.
You suggest in your book, and it for those which, you know, as you read the book, JW imparts a lot of wisdom to you, and it's very, and we'll get into a little more of that as we go on, but you suggest very early in your book, and sort of emulating yourself, I guess, in some ways, that people seek out models, I think is the word you use, to emulate in their lives. Tell us about that.
Well, as we develop, we really don't know who we are. We have a name, some people nicknames, but most children are looking for a role model, and they look around themselves in the community who the people are who receive attention, social reinforcement, people who are successful. And the more exposure we have to quality people, successful people, pastor, preachers, business people, bankers, people who have achieved something, and hopefully they share their achievements with others, contributing to the community, charity, and so forth. Those are the role models that we hope to find, or at least we hope our children would find. Of course, children are not going to find great role models on street corners or in a playground. That's why I'm very thankful that my parents made sure I had a mentor, somebody who spent time with me, made sure I did my reading, I did some homework, and held me accountable doing my homework as well.
You know, I think one of the differences in the a lot of people will talk to you about finding, about, you know, seeing who around you is a mentor, and this, and you know, in my life, I certainly have been influenced by a lot of, I credit a lot of my business success to some guys that I went to work for out in Texas that just took me under their wing and taught me the business of business, and it's helped me to be successful in business. But I don't think, I didn't actively seek out a mentor. I was just blessed and fortunate enough that I found myself next to one who took an interest in me. You, on the other hand, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but you almost say aggressively go find a model. Don't just wait for one to walk in the door somewhere, but find one.
Yes, absolutely. It's funny. I spent many years working in the prison system and rehabilitation, and I found out most people end up in prison because they don't learn from their mistakes.
Right.
So we have people who don't learn from their mistakes. And then we have some people who learn from their mistakes and do better. And then I have realized that there's no need to make mistakes at all. If you read your Bible, if you listen to your spiritual guidance folks, your parents, and if you have good mentors, successful people, you can avoid making a lot of mistakes. So the I'm certainly not a wise person. I'm lucky that I realized that wise people learn from the success of others, not from their own mistakes. I have made my share of mistakes, but professionally and otherwise, I have learned a lot from the success of others and avoided some more serious mistakes. So I would encourage teaching people to seek a model. Like when I decided to do private practice, I asked around who is a successful practitioner. Right. 21 years ago, I heard about Dr. Rosenbaum, very good with people, great heart. So I knock on his door. I say, hey, teach me. And he's still teaching me 21 years later.
You know, I was thinking while you were talking that actually that there is another way to look at that that actually is probably just as valuable. Those of us that – I think those of us that have had success in business, and not that we don't – I think we probably need counselors and mentors and models all our lives. But in addition, as you begin to learn things about life and begin to have some success yourself, one of the great joys – and I've interviewed a lot of business – pretty successful business people on here, and a lot of them, if you let them talk, they will. And when you ask them what do they enjoy about their career, their job, as they, and particularly those that have been in it a long time, what they will say is what they really enjoy is helping other people be successful in that business. There is a bit of a joy in being a mentor, isn't there?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, chapter 9 of the book that I push greatly and successfully through Ave Maria University students is. Chapter 9 is about replicating your success right. by helping others. If you teach other people what you know best, whether you're a carpenter or a cook or a public speaker, you make your mission to go out and seek out younger people and teach them how to find success and happiness. And through them, you can live forever. I never plan on retiring. My retirement to be... moving around and helping others, counseling people for free, coaching, because as long as you are helping others, mentoring others, you truly feel that life is really worth living.
Well, Dr. Silva, you're a fascinating guest, and we are up against a break, and we will be back in just a moment. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Our guest is Dr. Jay Silva. A very fascinating discussion. More to come. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. As always, glad you're here. Reminder again, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and in a bunch of other places. Just look us up, iTunes, wherever you want to. By the way, you can also go to eddiemayfield.com and find links to Dr. Jay Silva, to his book, to his practice. So go there and check us out on that. Dr. Silva, before the break, we were talking about the idea of mentors and models, which is a big part of your book, and you sort of weave that thread all through your book, and it's very interesting. Now, you began to get into some practical helps in the book, too. This is not strictly a book on theory. You have a lot of practical things in here. Start off with, tell us about the acronym SAGE, SAGE. What does that mean?
Well, SAGE means the wise man, the wise person. Is also a representation of JW. And each of the letters in SAGE has a meaning, like S stands for savor, S-A-V-O-R, meaning enjoy what you do have. We have so many blessings. We can see, we can smell, we can walk. There's so many things we should enjoy. So we need to savor life one moment at a time. A stands for attitude and appreciation. Again, your attitude dictates to a great extent how your life will go. People are very attracted to people with a great attitude, so recognize your blessings. G stands for God and not grudge. If we have faith in God, we're more likely to be positive and helpful to others. Grudge is self-destructive. E stands for environment. We need to keep where we live and where we work clean, remembering that our mind is part of where we live. We live in our minds a great deal, so we need to keep it clean and clear. That's what SAGE stands for.
You know, the whole idea of attitude, Dr. Silva, years ago, I was one of the founding members of a backpacking club over in Birmingham, Alabama. We went backpacking once a month, and our deal was no matter what the weather is, we're going backpacking. So we would go in the rain, the snow, the when it was nice, whatever. One of the things I've said, and I sort of get amused about that I learned back then, was that it makes a person's attitude makes a lot of difference if you're hiking in the rain. If you're hiking with someone with a bad attitude in the rain, that's going to be a miserable trip, and it's just going to be miserable. But if you're hiking with people with good attitudes in the rain, those two were fun trips. And it is correct that we, you know, a lot of us can control very little about our surroundings, but we can control our attitudes. So that's something we deal with. And I love hearing you say that, the idea, and the whole idea of savoring and enjoying what we have, attitude. Certainly being around, making the Lord part of your life, and then the environment. And I particularly was interesting what you said about the mind, because we can really, an attitude plays this role too. All of us are around people that are so negative that they just drain the energy out of you. You know, there's an old saying about this guy brightens room when he leaves the room, and not when he comes in.
I heard that before.
The trick is don't be like that. You know, one of the things you address in your book that I kind of find interesting, and I have to be careful of this myself, coming from a sales background, one of the things that we in sales have to fight, and we have a lot of sales training here on Driven to Business, and a lot of sales gurus have talked to us in the past, is salesmen talking too much. You need to listen more than you talk to be successful in sales. And you actually address that pretty directly, not in necessarily relating to sales, but in life, about people that talk too much in your book.
Correct. Well, again, that's not original. It comes from theory and practice. People get satiated very quickly. Children stop listening when parents talk excessively. Children like to change teachers. And to a great extent, when people get something to sell, they're too eager to sell, and they may satiate people.
Right.
Going back to Dale Carnegie, the best conversationalist is the best listener.
Right.
So if we get people talking about themselves, what they want, and we can correlate what we're trying to sell, what we have to give with what they want, we're more likely to develop a rapport, a friendship, and people may buy the product even if they don't need it. I personally have paid more going to certain places because the service is excellent, then pay less and go to places that I would come out of not as happy. So it's a give and take. We sell ourselves first. We have to make people feel important, and to people, their names, their opinions are very important, and we need to make sure we bring those out so they feel welcome, so they can connect with us. And any excessive verbal behavior in books, I call that hamburger helpers. I don't know if you remember the hamburger helper. I used that a lot in college. Sometimes books only need 100 pages. You could write a 400 pages, but the content of the book is only good for 100 pages. But hamburger helpers don't help anybody, really. It's volume, but not substance. So it's better to talk less and to communicate better.
Our producer Isaac here is getting married in the pretty near future, and I've been married a long time. And I was reminded when you were talking, you know, one of the biggest arguments my wife and I ever had was over not hamburger helper, but tuna helper. And I asked her if we would please never have that again. I didn't mind. You know, the you use a term, it's a fascinating term in your book called verbal addictions. Tell us about that.
Oh yes. That came from my listening to people who said they addicted to alcohol, and it took me a while to realize they were not really addicted to alcohol. They're addicted to the verbal behavior, the social notion of drinking.
Right.
The same applies to cigarettes and some other things. Anything that we are addicted to occurs at the covert level. We think about them. Say, the dinner is great. Now I need a cup of coffee and a cigarette. Oh, really, we don't need that. But when we think about them, we have those verbal addictions. we're more likely to act on them. And there are some other addictions. Some people think they're too short. Some people they're too tall. And they focus on those verbal addictions that affect their attitude towards life. So chapter 3 of my book teaches how to analyze verbal addictions. And if we can change verbal addictions into positive, constructive verbal addictions, we can change our lives overnight. And that's what chapter 4 is all about, how to convert negative verbal addictions to positive addictions.
You know, keeping in mind that a lot of our listeners have not really read your book yet, I think they're going to, but the whole idea of Life 100, you talk about the 90 plus 9 plus 1 Life 100 formula. And I really found that interesting. Tell us about that.
Well, one thing is for sure, we have a problem of productivity and a problem with joy. And the reason being, people waste a lot of time and energy doing things which are not functional. I used to call that ambulatory delirium, going from one place to another, thinking about different things and doing nothing about them. Finally, you work with children and then work in a prison system, then private practice, and very particularly in restaurants, I found that we need at least 90% of our energy, 90, to take care of things. And if we burn 90% of our energy taking care of our priorities in lives, we're going to be successful and happy. And then we have 10% left to plan tomorrow, 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, and to remember the past a little bit, but not too much, because we all need a little bit of depression and anxiety to realize how fortunate we are. If life was 100% perfect, we would not know the difference. We might think we are in heaven already.
I can't call up who said this, Adam, and I can't call the exact quote. You probably can, but you know, someone had said, my life has been a series of horrible events, most of which never happened. I mean, the idea was I just spent a lot of time thinking about horrible events, and they never happened. And I think it's what you're talking about. Don't spend, okay, if you need to deal with a problem, deal with it, but don't spend all your time in the negative side of things. Spend your energy doing what's going to accomplish something. Be productive with it. And
you're absolutely right. Most things we worry about never happen, like lightning. You know, we learn to be focusing on the future. We try to control the future, but the only thing we can really control is the present, and we need to live 100% now. You know, thanks God for one day at a time, and do your homework today, because what you do today become a rehearsal for tomorrow. And if you do your work today, you don't really have to worry about tomorrow. You're practicing for success, and tomorrow will be success.
That is such wise advice, Dr. Silva. You know, that comes straight out of the, I know you already know this, so I've been telling you, but that's actually a precept of the Bible. You know, when we're told don't, you know, tomorrow has its own problems. Spend most of your time dealing with right now. You know, I mean, and I don't know why it is, and I find this in myself. I have to fight this. It's somehow easier to worry about tomorrow sometimes than it is to deal with the issues sitting right in front of you. And I don't know why we tend to be that way, but it's really non-productive. You're right. You're right, and it's energy draining, and it does not lead to success. That's a very wise deal. You know, many people have noted, and you sort of allude to it, is it that more time ought to be spent on opportunities than the problems. Now, we talk about this in our business quite a bit. In about a minute, can you give us a little your professional thoughts on that?
Well, this is such a popular notion, you know, focus on the donut, not the hole. Yeah. The glass half full, not half empty. But in a general sense, life becomes what we think about. Every day is an opportunity to go for a walk, to be kind to somebody, to show our appreciation to God, and to love our family. So every day we live, it's a gift to be alive. It's a very, very low probability. It's a miracle to be here. So we need to truly enjoy and focus on the blessings of each day. There are problems, but problems are great because once we solve them, we realize how great everyday living, just being alive, is so great. It's like a headache. When I get over a headache, I'm very thankful for just having a head. I don't know if you ever had a toothache or not, but I did. And it was miserable. It was extremely painful. The minute the doctor took care of it, pressure is gone. I felt, wow, life's great. I'm glad I have some teeth. And life goes on. So, as a matter of fact, I've been writing some rap music for children.
Really?
I don't swear. I don't swear. It's all clean rap because mostly, you know, go to children. And, you know, life is like a donut, sweet as you go. You must enjoy the donut, and that's how it goes.
I'm going to interrupt you right there, Dr. Silva. I'd like to hear more about that after the break. We are running up into a break right here. You're a fascinating guy, and I appreciate so much you being on the program. There's more to come. One more segment, Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Don't miss this. Stick around. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. We're talking with Dr. Jay Silva and about his wonderful book called Life 100. And Dr. Silva, you can already tell if you've been listening, is a very positive and inspiring person to listen to. Right before the break, and he caught me off guard, he was telling me that he's written some rap music during the break. We were talking about this, and he wrote this in a way some prisoners, and I actually turned to page 62 in his book, and there's a rap song. Before we leave that, tell us a little bit about how you did that to communicate with some of these fellows.
Well, I started to work in a training school for boys, juvenile delinquents, and then I moved on to work at the adult prison correction facilities, and they were into rap. They didn't learn rules, so I figured if I put the rules in a rap song, they might listen, and they did. So basically, sometimes we have to communicate in a way that people listen, and I find that children, a lot of children, rap. I met a professor recently who hate rap, but I show him one of my rap songs and he liked it. So I think rap has a stigma of being inappropriate language wise and all that, but if you change the content and the intent, even rap, it can be good.
You know, I'm going to take one of your verses here and I'm going to do it to my grandkids. I'm going to tell you that it says, we don't whine, we don't slouch, we don't eat junk on the couch. I want to share that with my grandkids there at the house.
Thank you.
Dr. Silver, let's talk about the four pillars of life that you discuss in your book, social, physical, emotional, and spiritual. And I've heard this described by various people in various ways, but it's an important concept for anybody, whether your life revolves around business or anything, that your life is not, you're not a, Your life's not a mono thing. It's not just one thing. There's several things. And you do a great job in the book of talking about that. Tell us about those four pillars of life.
Well, Mr. Mayfield, I only had three pillars when I went to work at Ave Maria University. And I met a priest, Father Dave Testa, who became a very good friend of mine, who also used to smoke a lot, and his main message to students was, whatever you do, please don't smoke. But Father Testa read my book, and he said, you have a beautiful tricycle here. I didn't understand what he said at first, but basically he said, I was riding on a tricycle. There's a wheel missing, and if I added the fourth wheel, I would have a four-wheel drive, and the wheel was spiritual life.
Right.
So I had the social, physical, and mental health, but I didn't have the spiritual component that I later introduced and made a big difference to my life and the lives of other people I work with. So those are the four pillars. We need to keep them balanced, like in a four-wheel drive. We don't overinflate one, like our professional life, and underinflate our social, our spiritual life. We need to distribute our energy and keep things balanced. Otherwise, we might lose control of the car.
You know, I have had the opportunity and the privilege of being around a lot of very successful people in business. Most of them, I will say, have pretty good balance in their life. In fact, I would think the vast majority. I have known some, though, and probably everyone listening has, that dedicated too much of their life to their their career, too much of their life to that, to the detriment of other valuable parts of life. And as a result, although they were very successful in business, they actually lived a pretty unhappy life because of having life unbalanced. And I think that's what you sort of talk about. You can even chase good things too much to the detriment if you spend too much time on any one area of your life.
Absolutely. That's correct. Got to live a balanced life. And that's what the 90% energy invested in now, today,
right.
We need to distribute that energy into the four areas. Like we have to work effectively. We have to support our family. We have to pray. But also we have to take care of our hygiene and physical health. If we don't go for a walk, floss and brush our teeth, eat healthy, eventually by not taking care of ourselves, we're going to harm our families, our jobs, our work. So a balanced life give you a much longer mileage in your mission in life.
Dr. Silva, give us your... You've given a lot of thought to this. Give us your definition of success.
Oh, success. Success is a good one. Success to me is a daily thing. It's how you celebrate what you do and what you share with your, and how you share your accomplishment with your family, friends, and the community. Success to me is not 10,000 square feet home or multiple cars. Success is the degree of happiness and balance in your life. I had a more academic definition of success before in a previous book, being success a celebration of your successive approximations to your greater mission. But then I changed my mind, and in a simpler way of looking at it, celebrate each step of the way to the top. So success is living 100% now, a balanced life.
You know, I have to confess that particularly when I was younger and just getting started in business, I used to always be thinking, one of these days I'm going to be successful. And it was always around the corner. Like, you know, I'm going to get there, but it's around the corner. It's around the corner. And at some point, at least fortunately for me, because of my family and another good friend, they began to remind me that you don't postpone success. Success is now, is what you're saying. You know, and honestly, although we've had a lot more material success in the business than we were having back then, I don't know that we're any happier in the business than we were then. I think you've heard sayings before, success is a journey, not a destination. I don't know who said that, but that's
correct.
Pretty common. But I think it is important for folks in business and people in life to celebrate now. You know, I'm old enough and to know, and I've had many friends that did not anticipate pass away. And, you know, you don't ever know what God has in store for you. I mean, you know, life on this earth is very short and very precious, and it's not to be squandered.
Absolutely. Absolutely, sir.
I mean, get it going there. Dr. Silva, for in about a minute here, for someone like you that's had a lot of influence on other people and have given a lot of thought, I think more thought than many of us have given to the fabric of life and the fabric of success and the fabric of managing your life and living, as you say, 100%. How do you want to be remembered? What's important to you?
I don't even. No, if I want to be remembered, I just want that the people I leave behind to be happy and that I left more behind than I took with me. But if you insist, I'd like to be remembered as a good friend to my family and friends, somebody who tried to give more than what was expected, and somebody who expected very little and gave quite a bit of myself to others.
Well, just reading through your book, I've not met you before, but just reading through your book and seeing how you sort of share your life in here, I would think that you are you'd be a good friend to know, and I think mainly I keep coming up with in my mind the idea of a balanced individual, somebody who doesn't think too little of themselves, but doesn't think too highly of themselves either, and who is interested in career but not overly interested in a career, and who keeps his doesn't spend all his time in a gym working out, but at the same time does take care of himself and take care of his family and his emotional needs. And I think there's a lesson in that for all of us, because it's so easy for me and I think anybody to just get your life out of kilter in any way, and it really leads to disaster if you do that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for being on here today. Again, let's remind everyone, you can find Dr. Silva at life9091.com. You can also find, and if you go to eddiemayfield.com, if you can't remember that, go to eddiemayfield.com and go to the blog page. There will be links to Dr. Silva and to his book and his organization. Dr. Silva, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on Driven to Business.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for being my friend for the past hour.
Well, it's been great talking to you. I've really enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed your book. Thank you for letting me read it and share about it. And I'm a fan of the book. I would encourage anyone to read it. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday morning, and catch the podcast here on eddiemayfield.com. I am Eddie Mayfield, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.